I would like to start off by reading an excerpt, and it is called A Time for Healing. This excerpt is from when my aunt was attacked in 1994 at her home in Detroit, and I was amazed, not amazed that she was attacked, but amazed at her reaction to the attack. And I'm just going to read a small portion of it. The flip side of this terrible tragedy was an outpouring of love. Oprah Winfrey sent Auntie Rosa the most beautiful flowers. There were people driving by her house where she was never left alone to give money to her. One man came and handed Auntie Rosa his purple heart from when he had fought in the war. Another one flew all the way to Detroit from Ireland to see about the mother of the civil rights movement. And throughout all of this, Auntie Rosa never made one angry comment about the person who couldn't have left her dead that night, who could have left her dead that night. "He needs help," is what she said privately. We got the feeling that she really didn't even want him to go to jail. But that part was out of her hands. She still liked the neighborhood and, in spite of the ordeal, didn't want to leave Wildermere Street. That's the street that she lived on in Detroit. But a wealthy businessman gave her a place to live in a gated riverfront apartments, and she was finally persuaded. The love and kindness that she had always shown towards others were being rained down over her now. Okay, now this is where I'll stop, and I do need my sisters to come up to this podium. And I wanted to go ahead and ask them, what did they think when that happened, when that attack happened to our aunt? You know, what were your feelings about that?
I was shocked. I was shocked that somebody would do that to her. Everybody knew her. Can you hear me? Everybody in Detroit knew Auntie Rosa, and I was just devastated.
Okay. Well, all right then. I'll ask some different questions then. I wondered if any of my family members could tell the audience something about Rosa Parks that they may be surprised to learn. Just anything off the top of your head.
That she used to practice yoga.
And she did. And she inspired me to do it as well.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, actually.
Okay. And then what about, can we discuss something that you may have read or heard about Rosa Parks that you all found was surprising? Not the audience, but family found that was surprising. Something you read or heard in the newspaper, TV. Yes, Miss Rhea?
I was surprised at the amount of hate mail that Auntie Rosa received. And, you know, in our culture, the Western culture, it's like, okay, when you become elderly, we have Social Security. There are different things that seniors have. But I was surprised at how much hate mail she was still getting. I mean, yeah, after all those years, 90 years old, she was still getting hate mail.
But, and then on the other hand, too, she was getting a lot of love letters. Mm-hmm. You know, she was getting a lot of support from a lot of people, you know, at the same time. So she didn't let that bother her, though, you know. No, she knew they were, she knew those kind of people were out there, and it didn't bother her, you know. So she just dealt with it, you know.
I was surprised that she kept all the letters, though.
Oh, yeah. She kept everything. Everything, all those letters, and I was piled up somewhere.
Yeah, I'm really surprised at how calm she was in the midst of everything. There was an account of a bodyguard after the incident had happened in Detroit, and they were on a plane flying to and fro. The plane hit, what do you call those gusts, and then it drops.
Turbulence.
Yeah, turbulence. And then the plane drops. Everybody on the plane were, it was like a Hollywood movie, and Auntie Rosa was just there calm. My sister Deborah, you know, and I guess all of us, you know, in our own way, demonstrate that same calm, you know. And that is something that is truly amazing, because I don't know if I could be that calm, but she is. She was. We are. We're really a calm family. We don't like violence, you know.
Yeah, and it was when you was talking about the attack, I think it took me around 20 minutes to get to her house. And she was already had already forgiven this guy for doing that, and she was all bruised up, lips busted, and you know she was hurt pretty good. He hurt her pretty good, but she was already telling the you know the news people were already there and everything, and she was already telling them, you know he need help. That's just the kind of person she was. She didn't want him hurt. She didn't even you know she didn't want him to do anything. Just get him some help. That was Auntie Rosa.
I wanted to hurt him.
The whole neighborhood did go after him. That's how they caught him. Like the whole block neighborhood went. They went looking for him and they caught him. Police didn't catch him.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
Okay. I wanted to find out if you guys could tell the audience what would your favorite memory be of Auntie Rosa. Just what would your individually, can you recall one?
Yeah. Or well, not just one incident, but when she used to come to the Thanksgiving dinners, and even when she, she started vegetarianism, and when she'd come for Thanksgiving, she would break the rules. She was like, I'll pay for this tomorrow. I'm going to eat tonight, though. Yeah. She really enjoyed being around her nieces and nephews and our children.
And she was did a lot of traveling. And I don't care how tired she was, if a graduation was coming up or a school play or
wedding,
mm-hmm. Auntie Rosa was there. And she knew it was going to cause a lot of commotion. And she could be just like getting right back off a plane, and she would come. She would come. You know, she wasn't going to miss it.
And for me, it was when I was a kid, blueberry cobbler, you know, actually sitting there, and when she had time, cooking that with her. And Auntie Rosa could bake some chicken. It was really, really, really delicious. I love chicken, so, you know. But she could bake, you know. And but I loved it when she would
sister,
cook.
I was going to get to the recipes. That Okay, so I wanted to go ahead and ask you, what were your favorites, things that Auntie Rosa or Grandma would make for the family members? You started in on that chicken, the bacon.
Okay.
I'm so hungry.
One more thing.
Okay.
Cornbread pancakes. But they were really grandmother's. You know, but we all, you know, sat at the stove and not sat, but we all cooked it, you know. That's another favorite. The recipe's in the book, so.
I didn't care that for them now that much.
You didn't like them?
Deb, you don't have any favorite recipes? Because we'll move
the griddle cakes, I used to wait for those. I mean,
me too. My so oh, my goodness.
Me too. Okay, now, I wonder if you can tell the audience of a particular experience with you and Auntie Rosa, like some experience just with the two of you.
That impacted me the most?
Yeah, the two of you together.
That just the one incident when she was being persuaded to go back to the rally was in Mississippi for Emmett Till, after he had been murdered, and they were, the men who did it were acquitted, and everybody was trying to get her to go come to Mississippi for the rally. And when she, I mean, I told her, I mean, I was about 9 years old, and after all the adults got finished talking and trying to talk her out of going, which we still didn't know whether she was going or not, they all went inside, and because we were outside, they were outside talking, I was outside and listening to the conversation. And when she saw me, she, I mean, I was so angry, and I was scared, and I mean, even now when I think about it, it's really emotional. But she, I told her, I said, I hate white people. And she told me that that was wrong. Don't feel like that. Don't put all people in one category. And, I mean, I didn't understand then. I understand now as I was growing up. I understood what she was saying. But then I couldn't understand why. How she feel like that? Because they were showing the pictures of the little boy and telling about other stories of people that just disappeared, mm-hmm. people that they found in the rivers, and it was just hard to understand. How could she, you know, just be so forgiving?
Well, my aunt was raised by something, it's called the Golden Rule, and this is a very important rule, and that is to treat people the way you want to be treated and not how they treat you. My grandmother, that was something she did. She raised my father and my auntie like that. So it's not no matter what they do, but it's how you carry yourself. You don't want to, you know, you wouldn't want to smack nobody. You don't do that. Because you don't want anyone to smack you. Even if they smacked you, you still wouldn't treat them, you know, like that. Not in your heart. You know, you might pick up something and club them back, you know, when your mom wasn't looking or something. But I'm just saying that's how Auntie Rose was raised like that. She was raised with that golden rule. And I wish that we could all follow that lesson. That is the lesson that I love the most that Auntie Rosa did pass on to our family, is to treat people the way you want to be treated. I pass that to my sons and my grandsons as well. And did anybody else have an experience that was just you and Auntie Rosa you would like to share with the audience?
I can't think of that right off.
Okay.
I have an experience.
Okay. Bria.
Down south, everybody went to church, the whole community. Church was a part of the, you know, the daily living. Your week wasn't right if you didn't attend services. When I was a little kid, Auntie Rosa used to, well, and grandmother used to take me to church all the time. And just like she did in the South, we would walk to church. My aunt, I've seen her cry twice. She did not cry. We happened to be sitting in church and listening to services, and she started crying, and when I said crying, there was just a tear that rolled down her cheek, and I mean, it upset me because I had never seen her like that. So, as an adult, I realized the type of courage and strength that she had inside of her, how she was able to be in such ultimate control of her emotions. You know, so when somebody was nasty, you know. Like Sheila said, she wasn't nasty bad. You know, when somebody hollered at her, you know, she didn't holler bad. Matter of fact, she abhorred violence so much until when Father was sick in the hospital, the security lady, we have a lot of people in our family. I mean, you look at our picture in the book, 13 of us. And so when Father got sick, the security guard came in and she says, "Too many of you people in here." And Auntie Rosa was in the group. She was there 1 minute and gone the next. She was on her way home. She didn't like to be around people that were loud and, you know, that type of personality. She just preferred, if she was dealing with something inside of her, you know, to take care of it on her own. I admired that.
Now, I would like to read an excerpt called Her Quiet Companion, and this is about her husband, our Uncle Parks, because not too much is really written about him either. And I'd just like to read. It's in our family chapter under Her Quiet Companion. Uncle Parks was a very sweet man, but not very talkative. The most we usually heard out of him was during those in-depth conversations the adults would have about happenings out in the world. Maybe that was to be expected from people who had been affected by large-scale conflicts their whole lives. Auntie Rosa getting arrested was because of the politics that created segregation laws. Father had gone to war, where he followed orders from the government regarding America's enemies. And Uncle Parks had been an activist all the way back into the 30s, working to help the Scottsboro Boys, 9 Alabama teenagers whose cases went all the way to the Supreme Court when they were falsely accused of rape. Like our aunt, Uncle Parks' passion for justice must have burned from the inside, because we never heard him shout. It was still a time of debating issues, and there was a lot of community organizing taking place. So there were plenty of past and current events for him and the other adults to weigh in on. He was a genuine creature of habit. I think it was something about the Southern man and wife, I don't know, but both of them seemed to be very passionate inside, and they didn't, run around, stomping their feet much. They would put it into action. They joined different groups. They joined the NAACP. They worked tirelessly to make changes through, I think, with compassion, not with any type of violence. They were both like that. I just remember him being just as quiet and calm. And Auntie Rosa, too, not noisy at all. Even when she walked, you would just hear the floors squeak, the wood floors. But that was it. Nothing. People asked me if she used to sing. I don't remember her singing. I just remember the floor squeaking when she walked really slow to the kitchen. So I remember that about her. But I would like to ask the panel one more question, and it's concerning, I believe we have went to Washington, D.C. in 2013 for unveiling of a statue in Statuary Hall, and it's a beautiful statue, and I just want to ask my sisters, what did they, take away from that experience, or what would they like to share about their remembrances of that? No? You don't remember it?
Yeah, I remember.
Oh, but, you didn't like it?
The statue was beautiful. Yeah. I really liked it. I took my grandson, the youngest one, and he was really impressed. I mean, I'm glad to be able to take him so he could actually realize who his people are, who his aunt was.
It's a really, really proud moment, to see her statue in there with all these other great Americans. And there's Auntie Rosa sitting right up there with them. I think she's the only African American female in there.
She is.
So the truth is a bust of her, but she's the only full.
Auntie Rosa is the full statue.
Yeah,
it's a bust. And I was surprised it was just a bust of Martin Luther King in there, too.
Yes, absolutely.
But there she was, and it was just, it was wonderful. It was really, really a wonderful, proud moment to see her there, you know? And,
My proudest moment, I'm sorry,
go ahead.
My proudest moment was when I had the opportunity to meet our president, our commander-in-chief. President Barack Obama is all that and a bag of chips. I mean, he is very, I don't know, we were talking about him today, me and my family, and we were saying that he would be defined as probably a conservative libertarian. He loves people. He loves America dearly. I think he's doing a wonderful job. But to meet him and see him in person and to be around people that were sort of questionable, like Mitch McConnell's politics, John Boehner, I'm sorry, but, you know, to see them on stage, you know, I never, on the TV screen, I don't identify them with being human. But when they're in person, and John Boehner was the one that set everything up for us, we have a lot of family members. We had enough. We had 13 chairs, you know.
Tell them how you set up the...
Oh,
no.
You want to talk about White House security?
No.
It's very good.
Go ahead.
Well,
go ahead,
I hugged them both, John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, and the president. And
he cried a little bit.
I think it was Harry Reid. It was a large group of people on the stage to unveil the statue, and I thought it was really, really interesting. But I did want to go ahead and just say something in closing. I think it is so important that we educate ourselves as to what really happened in the South with the Jim Crow laws. And so that way we could, you know, begin to build some type of dialogue, start talking to one another about how we can make some changes. Like, my aunt has passed away, but it's people here that I'm sure, if they knew what the, you know, what the history of this Jim Crow was, you would never want to see anything like that again. And so I think it's important to learn as much as we can about it, and then we can make better choices for our families and ourselves. But I would like to read one more excerpt. It's just a small one, and it is from the Next Generations. And these are Rosa Parks' grandnieces and nephews, our children. And they wrote something in the book which I thought was really nice. And let's see. If nobody had ever known her name outside the family, Auntie Rosa was still a woman who we would all choose to emulate because of the help and support she taught us to give one another. It just happens that she was the Rosa Parks who gave help and support that went beyond her biological family. She was the Rosa Parks whose impact could be felt on countless corners and in numerous communities, and who sent ripples of her ambition spreading like weeds across the widest acres. Auntie Rosa had an effect that made almost everyone she encountered better for having known her. These are traits we claim as legacies to us. She was good in her heart, and that's what everyone saw when it came out in her behavior. The same goodness is in all of our family members. It's not weakness. It's what let Auntie Rosa move among all classes of people, from sharecroppers to international leaders. What it really represents is power. And Auntie Rosa showed us how to use this kind of power to make positive changes in the world and in all of our lives. Now, this is from my nephew, Alan, and Lonnie, my son, Thomas and Terrence, and my niece, Whitney, and nephew, Broderick. They are the next generations. And my aunt used to say all the time that we've accomplished much about the movement, but we still have so much more to do. And I think that is so true. I think we've come a long way, but there's a lot of work yet to be done. So if anybody has any questions for my group, you can ask.
Hi. Can you talk a little bit about the bus and the experience? And I don't really know about how often Rosa rode that bus, where she was going, you know, what led up to that day. I wonder also if others had tried to do what she had done but had been arrested or thrown off the bus and it never got publicized. Or
I believe there were several others that had attempted to do what our aunt did. And I think they were arrested. I don't know if some of them were ever seen again. But I believe they have to figure out that they needed to strategize, organize this thing a little better. And I think it was leading up to all of this. It was leading up to something. My aunt, she actually, she worked to get people registered to vote. That was really hard, you know, because they made that so difficult. And she was also working with the NAACP. So they treated her as a busybody kind of rebel rouser in Montgomery there. But she was just trying to help her people, anybody. She was just trying to help them. What happened on the bus that day, and our Auntie Rosa, she had a conversation with my sister, Shirley. And she said that she was coming from work that day on the bus, but the bus was not full. She sat, according to Jim Crow, in the colored section. So she sat where she was supposed to sit. But when another rider, the white rider, he comes and he gets on the bus, according to Jim Crow, there must be a row of seats that separate the colored people from the white people. But he sat down, and he was right near my aunt. And the bus driver told her that she had to get up. She had to move, but she was following the law. But he told her, no, you get up, you move. And she just said no. And in our Auntie Rosa, she was stating that she was tired. She was tired of the Jim Crow system. She was just tired of that system.
Yeah, she was tired.
I don't think she was physically tired. I think mentally tired.
Yeah, she was tired of being pushed around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was tired of that whole Jim Crow thing. And I think that it was just the right time.
Yes.
Me too.
You know, that everybody was ready for somebody. And she wasn't the first one that ever did it, you mm-hmm. know. But some kind of way, it was just the right time. Mm-hmm. And she did it, and it took off from there. I don't know. You know, we don't know. She did tell one of my sisters in the book, and it was wrote down exactly what happened. But basically, that was it. It was the time. Let's go ahead.
There are a lot of people who are in the open are not being afforded human rights, and I'm speaking about the homeless, of mm-hmm. course. And I wonder to what extent you think your aunt would address the issues that we see now in the abuse or the denial of human rights to many people, especially those who are homeless. Do you think, what do you think her stance would be on that?
Well, I think she will be standing up for anybody that injustices were being perpetrated on. And she actually was a humanitarian. That's what she was doing after what happened with the bus. People tend to want to go back to the bus. She moved forward. She progressed. She was protesting against apartheid. She was protesting for more equal work, equal pay for women's movement and for the unions. She was doing all those things, and she would still go out on speaking engagements and talk about what happened on the bus in 55, even though it was 30, 40 years ago. But she would still, you know, talk about that. But she also had her other works, and she was a humanitarian. So she was very active.
A lot of people thought that Aunt Rosa was going to work, coming back, and she sat down on the bus and got arrested, and she went home and sat down again, but that's not the way it was. She was an activist from a young lady. Mm. You know, she was, what, 40 years old when she got arrested, you know. And it was more and more work after the arrest. You know, she didn't just go home and sit down. But what she would say and do now probably be what she did then, you know. Organize, get the word out there, boycott, whatever she had to do. But she knew it took more than one person to do this. And it wasn't, she never would have rioting and setting stuff on fire and tipping over police cars and shooting at people. That ain't gonna accomplish anything. But I don't know. And they did get in Ferguson. They did get them to go through that, the police department, though.
I know right down the road in Dearborn at the Henry Ford, they actually have the bus that Rosa Parks was on restored, and are now showing it. I was just wondering if she was still with us when that was done and what she thought about it, and then what you think about having that icon and symbol right down the street for everyone to see today. Thank you.
This picture on the cover of the book, it's when they found the bus. It was not finished. It wasn't here in the Detroit area, I don't believe. I think it was south. And so they took a picture of her sitting on the bus. And then they brought it to the Henry Ford, and they refurbished it. It is very nice. You know, but this is why I like this picture, is because she's sitting on that Cleveland Avenue bus, and it hasn't been refurbished yet. So I just thought it was a really nice rustic photo, and I like that.
What would you think that she would say if she was here now?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think that, first of all, she would be proud of young people, because in the last 6 months, we have had several incidences of just civil disobedience. I mean, from Ferguson to New York, and now up, I think it's Washington State, where the man was killed with his hands up like this. I think that she would be pleased with the courage that young people have shown, because it does take bravery and courage to stand up to those things that we know are not right. And that's part of her spirit. It's just to stand up, say something. If you don't want to create a wave, if you just speak out on things that you know are wrong, that would be enough. And I think that's Auntie Rosa's spirit. I think the lesson that she left us was that any one of us could be a Rosa Parks. Any one of us. All we have to do is do the right thing. Speak out against injustice. It's very simple.
Hello.
Hello.
I've recently took a tour to the African American History Museum mm-hmm. with my school, mm-hmm. and I went to the Henry Ford Museum with my family.
Wow.
And it was kind of fun, because when I sat on the bus where Rosa Parks sat, it felt kind of cool. So, and I love everything that I'm getting, that I'm learning about Rosa Parks. So, thank you.
Thank you, too.
Aw, you're welcome. Thank you, young man. Yay. Cool.
I just have one question. Thanks for being here, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome.
My name is Brandy F. Pekin, and those are my two kids down there.
Hi.
So the question that I have is, when did you see Rosa Parks at her happiest? Because oftentimes we don't get to hear her speak, and we just get to see her sitting in a bus. I want to know when you saw her soul come alive. When was she happy?
At family reunions, weddings.
Mm-hmm. With her brother, her mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When she was around her family, that's when she smiled the most. I have a lot of nice photos that we didn't put in the book, where it was just family gatherings, and she smiled from ear to ear. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, I think, the time she enjoyed the most, because she could let her hair down, so to speak, you know, not really take all that hair down, but she could just be Auntie Rosa, you know. So that's when I think I saw her happiest.
And church.
Yeah.
At church, she loved church. Mm-hmm. She loved everybody that went through her church and all churches. And she loved children. She loved to be around children.
Little kids. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being here. My name is Africa, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
But my husband and I were married at the African American Museum where she laid to rest. So it's an honor. I admire her a lot. So I want to know, what was your process in writing the book as far as how long did it take, how cooperative was everyone, and what made it in the book?
Well, that is interesting. That's fun. It took 7 years. Wow. It took from 2007 to 2014 to get a publishing house to take a chance on this family that was not celebrity. We were just normal American family members who happened to be related to Rosa Parks. So they didn't... It took a long time, but the family was cooperative. They did send essays and photos, and I did have to find a ghostwriter. That's Eddie Allen. He's not here tonight. I did find him. My attorney, or our attorney, introduced me to him, and he had written another book, so I just had to find out what type of work he did, and I liked his work. He wrote a biography about Donald Goins, so I read that, read his work, and I liked it. I found out he was a Rosa Parks scholar, and I liked that as well. I never met this man in my life, but we hit it off. And then the family, they contributed a lot to the a lot of the words, because these are all of our collective memories. So it was a long, hard road. It was crazy process, but it was fun. It was well worth it. I love the product, how it turned out. You know, I love what Penguin Random House did. So even after all that fighting and arguing what pictures to put in, they didn't like a lot of my choices. I didn't like theirs. But you just have to push back when it's something that you want. So
that's what started it was Rhea and I went to breakfast with some friends of ours. And 8 hours later, after Auntie Rosa died, and 8 hours later, we were still at that breakfast talking about Auntie Rosa.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, you need to write a book. So that started the process.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it was talked about, stopped. Talked about, stopped. And we finally got it together, you know, and it took that long, you know. And then, like my sister said, a lot of the publishing houses, well, most of them didn't want to take a chance. And then they said, well, there's a lot of books about Auntie Rosa, Rosa Parks already out there. And do we need another one? And so we had to sell, but it was known written by her family.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what convinced us to go ahead and try it. So That's what happened, but it took a long time. It really did. And most of the family was, they were pretty cooperative. You know how family is, you know. I don't want that in there. This is going in. But nothing major. Yeah.
Okay.
It has been incredibly hard for me to share my aunt, our aunt, who I love so dearly, just like, you know, your mom, your aunties, your uncles. Same thing with us. And I have had to come to terms with how huge that impression she left on the world and what she did for us all. So that is probably, you know, how I would end it. But what I wanted to do was read just a portion of the book. And I kept looking for my name, Sheila. But anyway.
Surprise.
This part is entitled Strength. Mm-hmm. And it's just a small paragraph, so I'm going to go real quick. She has been an icon for women mainly because she demonstrated their capabilities. Mm-hmm. Women see Auntie Rosa in exactly the same way she wanted to be seen, as one person who did only what she knew was right. That summed up her basic philosophy, and her belief was that everyone has it within them to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
That sums up everything I can say about my aunt.
Nice.
You have a question?
Yes. Thank you for being here. I want to follow that line of thought. A couple things. In 1955, that was the McCarthy era. That was also a lot of union struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you knew any of the stories around Local 600 and Rosa Parks and the McCarthy era.
No, not me. We rarely talked about politics or, you know, hate or Jim Crow laws or anything like that at home. We were just a normal American family.
And then when Auntie Rosa moved up here with us, we were like little kids.
We were little.
I wasn't born.
You know.
You mean you wouldn't discuss?
Yeah, they thought that kids had their place and it wasn't sitting up there. Talking with them.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
So they didn't talk about it years later?
No.
To years and years later, if you asked.
Yeah.
But no.
A lot of things that I learned, I did research. By research, right. Talking with people.
And then brought it back to her or something.
Yeah. But mm-mm. I knew better. I didn't discuss those type of things with Auntie Rosa.
But I learned a lot by going to Montgomery, Alabama, and visiting the Rosa Parks Museum and Library. I learned a lot about Jim Crow. I did not know, you know, but that's, yeah, I back to stating that I think we have to go back and get educated on what happened in the past so we can make better choices for our children, for the future.
I agree.
So if we go back and get this information, just get a little feel of how it was having to live under those signs, colored and white, and get that feel of how you had to drop your eyes, look down. You had to walk behind somebody else. You know, you had to do that, or else you may disappear or you know, be jailed or beaten or any kind of punishment that you can think of. But I think it's really important to go get ourselves and our children educated as to what happened. And that'll make us stronger. That'll make us all stronger, I think.
And along with that, I would say that the United States doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. We can look at countries such as Germany. What is Germany doing so that they won't have this incident, the genocide of the Jewish people, happen again? We can look at them. And all we have to do is just teach our children so that this type of stuff won't occur again, so that, you know, we can move on. Just look at what other countries are doing.
Hmm.
Okay, sister. The only thing about that is that they don't want to alienate, well, Nate's getting into politics, but they don't want to alienate those countries from the United States or from Africa or from Europe. So they're not going to get into it with them.
No, you know? You misunderstand. I was just saying, because I've been reading and researching about racism. And when Germany took over, Hitler and his crew, they didn't just take over. It was a systematic giving away of rights. When mm-hmm. I pass mm-hmm. somebody on the street, I've got to step off because I'm mm-hmm. I'm Jewish. I've got to lower my eyes. The same thing. Mm-hmm. And if you compare them, the same thing happened in this country. Matter of fact, Hitler said that he learned all his ways from America. I'm just saying that we can look and see what Germany is doing in the present day so that they won't go back and revisit that, those same things. Okay. It won't happen in Germany again. Do you have a question?
Okay.
Good night. Thank you, ladies, for being here. So you were saying that her actions were just her feeling like she needed to do the right thing. So did she embrace being an ambassador that she was sort of made for this cause? And, you know, you shared about her really not discussing it and your family not discussing it. So was home and family sort of a respite away from being Rosa Parks?
No, I meant that at the time that she got here in 55, we were little kids. So, no, it wasn't talked about. And then 65, we were like 10. We wasn't talked about, not with us.
But to me, it was like that was her job. And when I go home, I don't talk about my job. I'm focused on my family, you know, activities around the house. But and then when I go back to my job, I take it up again. You know, when she was around us, it was her family.
Yes, I don't think that she would be, I don't think she wanted that. I don't think I would describe Auntie Rosa as a reluctant hero. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want it. But because that was a task that was assigned to her, she did it wholeheartedly. It was 110% for her.
No, she didn't have to do it.
No, she didn't have to. She could have sat back and lived a quiet.
She could have said, no, I'm not going to do it. I don't want to.
Yeah. So it was I believe that the love that she had for people shine through, because she was willing to do this into her 80s, and that's a long time to be out in the field.
But she was tired of being pushed around.
But I think she did it because a small child to a 42-year-old woman, you've lived under Jim Crow, and she just had enough. Mm-hmm. Plain and simply.
That was the simplest.
That is it.
That's what happened.
But she was no longer willing to take it. And it was organized. It was a strategy to it. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing just... She just ended up on the bus and knew... Well, I'm just a nilly-willy sitting here twiddling my thumbs. She knew something was going to eventually happen. It was work, and she worked. It was planned, you know. So I think that... she accepted it. And I think anyone that would read any of her letters that she had written from young girl up until adulthood, all her paperwork and all her letters are at the Library of Congress, you would see some of this this fire that was building in Rosa Parks. And it was coming. It was coming. So
and we're going to learn a whole lot of stuff, too, about those letters at the Library of Congress, because there's things that we did not know that we're going to find out. So we're going to go in May so we can see them, you know.
Thank you, everybody, for all your questions. And thank you for coming, too. Thank you.